topic of friends and what the book of Proverbs itself has to say about friendships and friends and the relationships between those. And it may seem, well, why does it matter? There's a lot of aspects of friendships that are important as we treat one another as Christians, as we treat individuals that are not Christians. And the literature here is significant in how it guides us in that interaction. So, again, there's no one passage. We'll be skipping from passage to passage because of the way that Proverbs is structured to pick up and glean different aspects of this. So as we go through our study today, we'll have several passages we'll want to read, but many of them are along the lines of specific topics. So the book of Proverbs, I want to start the first idea of defining what we mean by what a friend is. And I used the yourdictionary.com for this one because it was a more modern statement of a friend as opposed to Webster's or something else. If we asked anyone in the audience, what do you think a friend is, how would you respond? Some of you are older. You've had friendships that have been since childhood. How would you describe that friendship? I'll give an example. I have individuals that I have known since I was a child and played with as a child. I could go up to that person and hug their neck anytime and expect a reciprocal appreciation from them. The definition here from yourdictionary.com is a friend is an ally, someone who is on your side, someone that is that you talk with and whom you spend time to. And in many cases, a friendship is a scenario where when you pick up that next conversation, it's just like you hadn't left the last one. You know, it's an ongoing relationship. It's generally someone that you trust their advice, you trust their response. In this first definition here, it says that someone is an ally that's on your side. A little bit about that, a friend is, being on one side may not mean being in agreement with you. A friend may have to admonish you and counsel you when you need it. And that's really more the definition of a true friend, is someone that's willing to step in when you are in need and say the hard things to you. And you, because of your trust and relationship with them, receive it in that way that they love you and they want your best interest at heart. Proverbs talks a lot about having friends. It says they will love you at all times. Proverbs 17 and 17 specifically points out that a friend loves at all times and a brother is born of adversity. In the military, you hear the term comrade in arms. An individual that has gone through the trenches with you, shared common experiences. A friendship that's not in the military might be someone that you've gone through some very difficult times. I would expect those who live through the religious turmoil in the church in the 50s and 60s and their friends stayed with them, that's a very common bond, having gone through those difficult times. They stick closer than a brother. So if we think about advantages of having friends, what do we hear of? There's a phrase that relates it to the weather. There are fair weather friends, aren't they, at times? They're with you when things are going good, but when things aren't going good, not so much. We'll talk about it later. In the example of the prodigal son, what happened to his friends as time went along? When the money left, so did they. Okay, and we'll talk about one of the characteristics of friendship being tied to money, but a friend is one that'll stick closer than a brother. We've heard the phrase thicker than blood. In some cases, as a description of a friendship that's stronger than just a relationship by kinship. In Proverbs 18 and 24, it says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Proverbs 27 and 10, better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. It kind of gives you the sense of a brother that's physically removed from you. It's more beneficial to have a friend nearby that's a next door neighbor than it is to have a relation that you can't physically depend upon at that time. Having friends, they rejoice the heart. The description here in Proverbs 27 and 9, oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. That ties back to the definition that we talked about earlier, someone that you trust and someone that will admonish you and give you advice, particularly when they see your best interest in need and giving you that information. The advantage of having friends is they'll support you in times of trouble. Proverbs or Ecclesiastes has a fairly extensive passage to this, and it relates the comparison to rope and to other features that gain their strength by not being a single cord, but by being multiples. So where does a rope get its strength? Is it any one given fiber? Now, if you take a hair on your head and you pull on it, it'll snap pretty easily. But if you braid it up pretty heavily, somebody can grab you by that braid and drag you around, can they not? It's the idea of the multiplicity of strength in numbers. And the support in times of trouble with multiple friends here, it makes the point, two are better than one because they are a good reward for their toil. For they, if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone. You know, it's tough being on your own. We talk about examples of people that suffer from mental disorders or depression, feel that they are alone and no one's on their side. Well, is that necessarily true? No, it's not necessarily true, but they may feel that way. And because of that, they don't feel that they have anyone to lift them up. This passage here makes it important, though, with respect to friendships, that it's key that there be individuals that we rely upon to be with us and encourage us and strengthen us. Because if we think what does the Bible say about if a man thinketh he stand, take heed lest he fall? That fits with this as well, does it not? If you're just standing alone and you're relying upon your own wisdom, what does it say about the fool and he's wise in his own eyes? So we need extra perspective at times, though, from our friends, from our leaders, from our shepherds, to give us that guidance. If we look at the circle of friends here in the support of times of trouble and tie together with the relationship as Christians, who should make up that cord of friends, so to speak? If we look at the relations that we have internally as Christians and as family members, what generally comes first? Family? Okay. And in the case of a husband and wife, you know, a spouse, probably as your first line of defense. Hopefully we're good friends with our spouses. So as we go forward with that and we expand that circle of the cord of friends, who else are we going to rely upon? We go back to that definition. What did that definition say? Our friends are considered those that what? We spend time with, we associate with. Why is it important for that for us to gain support from that? You don't spend time with people they don't know anything about you, do they? They don't know how to counsel you. They don't know when something's bothering you, other than maybe your countenance has fallen and they haven't picked up on it, or maybe somebody else hasn't. Christians, expanding it beyond just relationships where we work or co-workers and friendships within the church. if we don't talk to each other, we don't necessarily know what's going on, we can't be there to lift somebody up. So this all fits together if you look at that expanding circle of friends, whether it's, you know, family, the church, our elders, you know, our secular friends, hopefully that are wise. And there are those that are secular friends that are wise, but they may not always have the same interests and values as what we should have.
We always heard about one rotten apple.
One rotten apple will spoil a whole barrel. You know, it's that, that's true. But as it relates, and if you look at a suspension bridge, you want all of the suspension bridge cables to be well supported and be carry the same load, and not one of them be rusted out and failing. So, but advantage of having friends is they'll support you in times of trouble. Biblically, what's the most noted family relationship or friend relationship that comes to mind to you as an individual supporting someone in trouble? There'll be multiples, but what's the most noted, probably? What did Jonathan do for David when he was fleeing from Saul? He went to his father on his behalf and almost took a spear for David. Okay. Advantage of having friends is they'll sharpen the countenance. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. Are we better generally for having friends? I would say that we are. The Bible talks about he who wants to have friends show himself friendly. If you're not an individual that has friends or makes friends easily, it can be an effort to make that happen. Psychologists talk about how we are categorized, and there's different ranking scales that we're categorized on. And I'll only make the comment there, it's easy to see that there are introverts and extroverts. People that just, that are the life of the party and don't know anybody that's not a friend, and there are those that would just as soon sit in a corner and read a book and be as happy as life could carry them on. There's introverts and extroverts. An introvert generally has a hard time making friends because they just soon be by themselves. An extrovert is so outgoing, he may not know what his real friends are. It takes perspective on our behalf as it looks at where we garner this friendship from, that we work with all types and at least recognize the differences. Francis Bacon, the best preservatives to keep the mind in health is the faithful admonition of a friend. When we look at the time of Rehoboam, and he went to seek counsel from different individuals, who did he trust in? He trusted in the young guys of his own generation. He trusted in his friends, did he not? Did he get good counsel? Well, he got counsel, but it wasn't very good. The older, the wiser men that had admonished him, that had been the advisors of his father, Brother Craig says, you know, it goes to show you your friends need to be Christians and not necessarily friends of the world. I think in that day that all of his friends there were probably Jews, but they weren't the right kind of person that was seeking the word of God and seeking the best interests of the people. And we even have to categorize that today. As our Christian friends, do they have the right influence on us? So I think it is the first level to look at our friendships, and I think the Bible talks to us about associating with fellow brethren over the world. But we have to be careful, do our fellow brethren have our best interests at heart at all times? They should, not always. A friend will do for you. He will rebuke you. What did Paul do for Peter? He withstood him to the face. Okay, Proverbs 27, 5 and 6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. We talk about the phrase, someone's kissing up. You know, they want something, generally. And here is the passage. It puts it into, you know, flattery, the kisses of an enemy, as opposed to, you know, somebody, the wounds of a friend is better because he has your best interest at heart. He will show, a friend will do for you, he will show pity to you. Job 6 and 14, to him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friend. What did Job's friends really do for him? You've sinned and you're going to die, and they really didn't try to encourage him at all. Didn't take into account his character and his behavior and his consistency of life. He will show support during adversity. 1 Samuel 19, 2 through 3. I think this is, well, we referenced this earlier, but I think it's important to read this passage in 1 Samuel 9. What's that? That's right. That's no wonder it didn't make sense. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David, Saul my father seeketh to kill thee. Now therefore I pray thee, take heed to thyself unto the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and will commune with my father and thee, and what I see, and I will tell thee. What's the background story surrounding this passage? Saul's king. David's been head over the armies in many ways, leading the forces. And what have the people been yelling about David? He's killed 10 times as many as Saul. And we know that Saul has fallen out of favor with God. He's been admonished by Samuel because of the offerings that he's made. It's talked about he's taken on an evil spirit of attitude toward David as a result of this. But the background story is, what is Jonathan actually there? He's second in command. He is the one to ascend to the throne by tradition. Who's actually going to ascend to the throne? David. So the person that's going to be king is going to the current king and asking him on behalf of the one that he knows is going to replace him. That takes courage on Jonathan's part. It also takes selflessness on Jonathan's part, because what did he recognize about his friend? He recognized that God was with David, and that he needed to be leading the kingdom. So, it took a tremendous amount of trust on David's part. You know, when you're talking about power, power is infectious in many ways, and it'll lead people to do things that you wouldn't think they would otherwise do. We see the purity of Jonathan's heart throughout his entire life cycle, and it's exhibited here again. But we see here, this is just one of the examples of Jonathan intervening on his friend's behalf and standing up for him. A friend will do for you, he will rejoice with you. I think it's interesting when we see the story of the parable of the lost coin. The individual went out and they found the coin. What did they go and do? They celebrated, and all the friends came together with them. In the case of the lost sheep, they celebrated over the recovery of that lost sheep. At the end of the story of the prodigal son, what did they do? They celebrated. They celebrated over one who was lost coming back. So, a friend will do for you, he will rejoice with you. In this relationship here, obviously, it's the father that's throwing the party for the returning son. But there is certainly a level of friendship and love that exists between a father and their children that transcends that very idea. What will a friend do for you? He will lay down his life for you. Now, most notably, who laid down their life for us? Christ. The examples of that as we go through here in John 15 and 13, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for his friends. It's what Christ did for his friends, what Christ did for his fellow brethren, for his brothers and sisters in Christ. In 1 John 3:16-18, by this we know love, that he laid down his life for us and ought to lay down our lives for brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? When we see a need that is pressing, whether it be an individual that's hurting spiritually, whether it's being an individual that's hurting physically, we have an obligation and a responsibility based off of this passage. How to get friends? We need to be friendly, do we not? It goes to that definition of what is a friend: one that has the best interest of another at heart, spends time with them, relationship. Is it easy in a congregation of 250 to get to know everybody on a daily basis? It's impossible. Social media has made a tremendous stride in actually keeping up with the superficial activities of what people do. But does knowing what somebody's activities are really tell you what they're thinking and feeling? Not completely. It only tells you what they're doing or what they want you to know that they're doing at the time. In being friendly, in Proverbs 18 and 24, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. He must spend time with other people. Spending time, get to know people. Laughing together, having fun together. I know that outside of the church, a number of people had a gathering last night, and from hearing some of the reports back, there were a lot of laughs shared. So, be loyal. How to get friends. Proverbs 27 and 10, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. That's an interesting admonition. Why not forsake your father's friend? The passage doesn't tell us, but I can think of some reasons. Could have been just like Rehoboam. If he'd listened to his father's friends, he might not have gotten into as much trouble. And I think that's the absolute case, because our father's friends have watched us grow up as children and still, in many cases, probably have been mentors or father figures to us. So to forsake those types of relationships turns aside from even what we would consider to be family. In Proverbs 25 and 19, confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. That's a harsh comparison. A bad tooth hurts, does it not? And if you've sprained your ankle or rolled your ankle and it doesn't work right, it hurts with every step you take. Confidence in an unfaithful man will hurt with every step you take with that person. How to get friends? Be great. Use gracious speech. And we know there's a whole, and we'll talk about the tongue and our language and speech in another lesson. It talks about let our speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt. There are certain types of words that, like apples of gold and pictures of silver, special words. Use gracious speech in 22 and 11. He who loves purity of heart and has grace on his lips, the king will be his friend. An individual that's wise in how they talk to another person, to their friend, will be that way. Things that destroy friendship. And there's a lot of things that can get in the way of friendship. And I'm going to throw the first one out. And this is the first one that's listed in the series of study here, is money. Proverbs 6:1-3. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor and given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, save yourself, for you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go hasten and plead urgently with your neighbor. Now, that passage sounds pretty dire, does it not? In a lot of cases, it talks about a snare. It talks about pleading urgently with your neighbor. Obviously, there's some impetus behind that, some importance behind why putting up security with your neighbor could be a problem. There's an adage that says, neither lender nor borrower be. You know, and a simple admonition here is, in the case of whether it be family members or relations in the church or friends, is that if you're going to loan somebody some money, you might as well take the attitude that you're not worried about that ever coming back. It'll just as be easier to say, I've given you that as a gift and I don't expect anything back. It'll be easier to not be disappointed in the future. But if you are taking a loan from a fellow brother, and this happens, let's say you set up and you decide to sell a house to a fellow Christian, you self-finance it. What if they fall on hard times and miss half dozen payments? That gets sticky, does it not? Because you have an obligation at some point, if they can't make the payments, take the house back or help them find another location to live. Things like that get tough. We talked about crucial conversations in some of our studies. The first thing when you get to talking about money, crucial conversations come up in a hurry. And particularly as it's related to this. What about parents that have loaned their children money? You know, whether it be for an education or whether it be for a car, and maybe they don't actually follow through on what they say they'll do. That's tough. That's a hard conversation. Especially if they're living in your own house and you have to see that conversation come up every day. Money can be a real challenge as it relates to friendships and being able to destroy it. Proverbs 17 and 18, one who lacks sense gives a pledge and puts up security in the presence of his neighbor. That's not a favorable light that it paints that relationship in. Not at all. Things that destroy friendship: whispering and gossip. Now, tongue is a terrible fire, it seeks to destroy. Well, you learn something from a friend and you go tell somebody else, you've first off broken the trust with the first friend, and secondly set up a tale that's going to expand and grow and to take on a life of its own. Whispering and gossip in 17 and 9, he who repeats a matter separates friends. If somebody tells you something in confidence, what does that mean? You do not pass it on. You just absolutely cannot. I know, I'm going to suppose, I've never served as an elder. I've watched my father deal with situations. As husbands and wives oftentimes can talk to each other about things and use each other as a friend, there's things that sometimes they can't share. Because it's in confidence as an elder, they really can't leverage that relationship. And in a scenario here, you know, what if you let something slip and it gets out some other way? That gets really hard. Relationships which are, you know, news or information is given to us in confidence is an absolute, you can't talk about it. You can't spread it. You can't go to the next person. That's kind of the idea that's given here. But there are things that we're going to know about friends that we may learn in passing. Obviously, if it relates to their spiritual needs, we're going to have to take action upon it. But there will be things that we learn that if we start talking about it, it could take on a life of its own. It could be misconstrued.
somebody may start something, you miss out. I don't even want to hear.
Brother Burns says, somebody that's willing to talk to you about something very well will start turn around and talking to someone else about yourself. So it's key to be important in what you see and how that conversation goes. Other passages related to that are numerous throughout the Bible. It talks about talebearing, whisperings in the New Testament, but here it repeats a matter that separates friends. Disloyalty. Psalms 41 and 19. Even my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. This is David describing his own betrayal, certainly by his son and other leaders within his military at that time. Negligence. Friendships take time. Going long periods of time without associating with one another causes friendships to wane. We don't follow up on somebody, they think, well, you don't really care anymore. Like we said here, it's tough with a situation where you have as many people to make contact with to actually go around and talk to everybody. It's tough to even get out and speak to visitors on the way out and make sure that they, recognize that we notice that they're here. Sometimes a visitor will come in and say, well, nobody ever talked to me. They're not very friendly. Was that intentional? Not necessarily. That's the story they told themselves just because something transpired the way that it did. So, key aspect, though, here of negligence. If a husband and wife aren't talking regularly, it's going to cause problems, is it not? If parents and children aren't talking regularly, we can see the evidence of that. It's going to have problems. If we're wanting to maintain relationships with friends, it's that same type of extent that needs to be carried on beyond that. We need to touch base with people. We need to be friendly with them. We need to check in on them. And that may mean when we see body language changes or behavior changes, we have to be conscious of it. Somebody misses services 4 or 5 times in a row. What's going on? You hear word that somebody's visiting somewhere else. Well, why are they visiting? Well, they may have kids there, or they may be saying, I got a problem here. And a friend, though that's a hard conversation, probably has to pick up and kind of inquire. David and Jonathan had a tremendous friendship. We see their relationship between one another described as love for one another. We see it illustrated throughout how they interacted with one another. In the case of when David was running for his life, and Jonathan went before Saul at the dinner table where the feast where David had been invited to, because Saul was seeking to bring David to the feast so that he could kill him. And Jonathan responds back that he's not here, he's off attending to this. What did Saul pick up and do? He picked up a javelin and threw it at his own son. That takes a tremendous amount of courage on Jonathan's part, first off, to do that, knowing the temperament of his father at that time. When we look at other individuals that interacted throughout the Bible, I think we can pick up some key friendships. I would say that Joshua and Caleb probably had a strong friendship. The Bible does not talk specifically to it. But when it comes down to going through adversity together, what did they experience together? As two of the 12 spies that came back reporting what? We can take the land. And the other 10 said what? No, we can't. They stood for what was right in the face of all of their other peers saying, no, we can't. And stood together throughout that entire time. Because of that, obviously, they ended up surviving the wandering in the wilderness together. Talks about when they went in to take the land, what two families were of key note? Caleb's family, Joshua's family. Joshua, obviously, because he was leading the entire people at that time. But Caleb went and conquered his portion, and you can see the interaction over and over. When we look at the relationship between Paul and Barnabas on the first missionary journey, and they come back and they're interacting and being preparing for the second missionary journey, what conversation came up? Whether or not they were going to take John Mark with them. Was that a contested conversation? It was. It was fairly contested. Did they end up agreeing to take John Mark with them together? No. They came to a mutual decision to go different directions. John Mark went with Barnabas, and you know, Paul took others with him. What do we find out later in Paul's imprisonment as it relates to Barnabas and John Mark? John Mark was considered to be profitable to Paul, and he was asking that he come and join with him. Tough conversations can actually end for the overall good. Can you think of any other friendship relationships that interacted within the Bible? Those are the easy ones for me. Timothy was like a son to Paul. If we take it with respect to friends and how they treated one another, we have both good and bad examples. What about Joseph and his brothers? It worked out good in the end, okay? When we look at the fact that it was God's providence and intent that Joseph end up going down into Egypt to be able to provide a way for taking care of his family, it worked out good in the end. When we see Joseph's attitude toward his brothers after he reveals himself to them, what did he do? Told him it was God's providence, but he basically sent all the Egyptians out and broke down and cried in front of them. So, but we see, even in that relationship, what did Reuben want to do with Joseph before he was actually sold? Well, Reuben was actually going to go back and pull him back out of the pit and take him back. They had thrown him in the pit, and he was going to come back and get him out, and when he went to do so, he was gone, and finds out that they've already sold him. He was kind of distraught. You see a relationship there that he went along with all of it to begin with because of the other brothers, and this shows peer pressure, obviously, but it does show that he had some care for him, or at least care for his father. Friendships need to be nurtured. Friendships take time. Being a friend requires being friendly, and the book of Proverbs touches on all aspects of those, and we can see that the relationships of friends illustrated throughout the Bible. We can see it illustrated throughout the New Testament. The fact that the apostles, coming from diverse backgrounds, got along and worked together for a common goal is an example of friendships. And the pairing together of a tax collector and a zealot would have no doubt been an interesting combination, but they put themselves together to do the work that was in front of them. Any comments on friends? I'm glad you mentioned them, because it was on my list and I forgot. There's no doubt about it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel certainly had to have had a strong friendship relationship. No doubt.
Best interest of Saul's heart in trying to convince him
That's true.
Saul was not of the same mind, therefore there was this animosity, but not on the part of David.
Correct.
He treated each one, so our lesson from that is we treat each other as you know, with their best interests at heart, and the friendships, they'll come, you know.
And they'll come on their own time. You know, if we treat each other with our best interests at heart, the friendships will come. They just will develop over time. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that. Thank you for your attention.